Oh, hey, it's you guys. Look, if you're going to hang around, you might as well get a broom and help out. If you've got time to lean, you've got time to clean. Welcome to Seaside Pod Review. Kev and I are back at the mics, and we've pulled out what some may consider a doozy, or possibly a humdinger, and yet there are some that we'll call a turkey. Sit back, we are talking Queen.
Brand new angle, highly commendable, Seaside Pod Review. Woo-hoo. Seaside Pod Review. Gobble, gobble. Seaside Pod Review.
You go play pool tonight there, Mr. Brown?
I did go play pool tonight.
And how did it go?
It went better than usual.
Wow.
I think I got my 3-game high score tonight.
Really?
Yeah. So I got shot. Bowled a 182, 167, 167. Which is pretty good.
Wow.
So I was quite happy with that.
That's pretty impressive.
Not bad, eh, Mike? Because my average is about 155, I think. So I was above average on that, which is, doesn't that usually happen? Usually I have but one game sort of around 160, 170, and then just shit the bed for the rest. And so tonight it was a nice change, Randy. I sporched well. You've been proud of me.
Good on you. It's good for you, Kev. You're a man of many talents.
Well, I
many,
mean,
many talents.
Many attempts at things. How about you? What sports have you been up to? Have you been up to any sports?
No.
No sports, go sports for Randy?
Well, just hockey. I think we talked about that since the last time I did that, didn't I? Didn't we? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
I actually had some lacrosse games. I don't know how much everybody likes lacrosse on this, but I canceled. I said I'm not going to do it because I fucking hate working with lacrosse.
So there's no lacrosse talk this week.
Oh my God, that's terrible. I said it out loud. It's awful.
You love it.
I turned down work. I don't normally do that.
And you see, you got no work. You got no stories for me.
Well,
you
got, yeah.
You know, have you thought about that? Have you remembered the anecdote that you forgot when you were sitting on the John the other day?
No, that's
no, that's gone. That's definitely flushed
that's
away.
Long gone. Yeah, it's flushed away with like so many of my hopes and dreams given. Yeah, no, I don't. I should have a nice little anecdote, but I just don't.
Just don't, eh?
I don't got one. Yeah, wouldn't it be good if I? Wouldn't I be a better podcast host if I had something like that to say
to tell me?
You know? Yeah, if I could just go and just oh, hey, here's a funny little story, you know.
Okay, here we go. Well, here we go, people. I'm going to be carrying this one tonight by the sounds of it.
You're fucking carrying the whole show.
Oh, yeah, right. This is a two-man operation. You can't play tennis with yourself.
Sure you can.
It's called I suppose racket. You can against the wall, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, scratch that. bad analogy. All right, well, should we get in some Queenie then?
Well, why don't we just fucking get right on this fucking Queen stuff here?
Straight in it. All right, well, last week we talked about She Makes Me, Stormtrooper and Stilettos. I mean, I said that I do like the song and it's one that I would never dream of skipping and I do enjoy it, but on balance and looking at it as objectively as I can, it's like, you know, on any metric I tried to think about it, wasn't really a champion for me. It wasn't a champion for you. Mm-hmm. But our Twitter users, we're not usually, not that often at odds with our Twitter users, our Twitter poll users, but this week we are. What were the poll results, Randy?
Well, they were 60.2 champion versus a 39.8 biting the dust, Kev.
Yeah, and you guessed 55 to 45, and I went 47 to 53 because I thought this one was coming back negative. I thought it would be below 50, and God damn it, I was wrong again.
Just too many lovers of the sheer heart attack.
Well, we'll get into that for sure. Yeah. Paul Moody, Sword of Reason, who I'm still catching up on the Weirdest podcast, which everyone should be listening to, says, Brian invents indie rock. Love it. Champy fucking yawn. And that does kind of have like a shoegazy sort of, you know, depressing, oh, I'm going to my room and listening to my tapes kind of vibe to it, right?
Yeah. Nobody understands me.
Okay, Chrissy at the Waters of Love says, aye, this song be a champion for very personal reasons. Just something I wrote a little while ago. So I'm going to read this out that she had posted on Twitter. This song, I hated it when I was younger. Yes, it was slow and boring, Once in my 30s, I saw it a different way. I interpreted it as a man with his mistress taking part in aftercare. It is a time when one can feel extremely vulnerable, and this I know from my personal experiences with BDSM. I see this pair at her inner city apartment, the sounds of the city and his pleasure. So I see myself in this song, remembering those experiences I had when it wasn't just sex, it was love. How I finally felt like I belonged to this world, how I felt wanted, how I could be myself, be vulnerable. So the boring slowness became a cozy blanket and an intimate moment between the two. It's the vulnerability that gets to me and that pushes this song into the champion territory. Not a super strong champion, and sure, Brian may have had a bit of a dirty mind, but there's a comfort here. Those sirens never felt alien to me. So there you go. Once she connects on that sort of level with a song, then the artist has done their job, I would say.
I would say so. Yeah, nice job, Chrissy. Ruddy Rutherford, who, by the way, Ruddy, I've noticed that you are standing by your mailbox and waiting, and I just can only remind you to just not...
Don't move.
Don't move. Like, don't stray from that. Because sure as there's cold shit and a dead dog, as soon as you turn away, someone's going to, you know, gonna drop a check in there, and then someone will be like, we'll grab it, and we'll have scoffed it, and you'll have missed the whole thing. And, you know, maybe even as a good faith gesture, maybe I'll even see if I can get a photo of me stroking the check for you. But anyhow, here, Ruddy says, it's about the ambiance and mood for me. The gentle and repeating melody and the fragility of Brian's vocal gives this song a vulnerability that speaks to my soul. I can fully understand others dusting it, but not me. Sure, it goes nowhere. It doesn't need to, as it's already arrived. Which is to me, it's like, oh, Bri, you have arrived. Dieter at My Chameleon Days says, I like it. I'm a sucker for repetitive melodies. Besides, the title in brackets made also a nice title for a beautiful Keep Yourself Alive / Stone Cold Crazy 7-inch in 2011.
Yeah, and I think that's a Record Store Day release, the pink vinyl, by the look of it.
Righto.
Righto, Alex.
Paul Bradbury says, dull, ploddy, and repetitive. The one moment that pulls down Sheer Heart Attack for me. I skip it on CD or streaming, and a track I grudgingly endure when listening on vinyl, desperately waiting for Lap of the Gods Revisited. Yeah, man, like I said, I do enjoy the track. I just, in isolation, that's what we're listening to. Brad Patton says, one of those Sheer Heart Attack tracks that make up the whole, as opposed to being a standout song on its own merit. This has always been my least favorite of that album, and whilst I don't dislike it, I think it's a dust for me. So I think me and Rob are in basically exactly the same place.
There you go. Doug Kerr and Doug Seabus says, dust. But I dig the back half of it. At 2:46, the chords change from a major to a minor, altering the whole mood. Our narrator has left the cocoon like he knew he would someday, and now he feels fear and anxiety. Change isn't always easy, even when it's ultimately for the better. Yeah, it's funny. Did we note the chords changing from major to minor?
I don't think we did. We did talk about the lead out being weird because you get all those siren noises and the sort of the weird... Mm-hmm. Not quite military, but the sounds of the street and whatnot, right? But I don't think we commented too much on that. Maybe we didn't. Maybe we were just too superficial with it, Randy. Eh?
Yeah, maybe. Eh? And Jim C. Curtis Sparkle says, I like this. Obviously, it's one of the shallowest tracks on Sheer Heart Attack, but being a part of the first Queen album I heard and loved it is fondly regarded in Shea Sparkles. Mm. So, yeah, Jim digs it. You know, it's okay. It's all right.
And Jim, I mean, he's sort of just like, I don't know if he's had his account hacked or what's going on, because that's just sort of pleasant. And
where's our angry old Jim?
Well, I don't know. I have to send out a rescue party, I think. Our pal Leighton Brown, Top Leighton, says, I know a lot of folk love this song, but it gets right on my tits. Boring, dull, plodding, monotonous, whiny, moany, dirge. I cannot stand it. Just in case you need clarification, and because the Cardinal likes the photo, another one bites the dust.
Top Leighton cooks. Top Leighton swings. He's got the look. Woo! Top Leighton. He's the king.
That's our favorite photo of the dog biting the dog.
I love that one. It is really good.
Rob Morris says, looking at my music player, it's one of only three Sheer Heart Attack tracks without a heart next to it. Yet I cannot, in good conscience, dust anything from my favorite Queen album. It serves its purpose, and I couldn't imagine Sheer Heart Attack without it. Champion. Yep, absolutely fair call.
And Midwife Nikki. I had to think long and hard about this. On one hand, Brian absolutely needs to go and take a cold shower. And I don't need to be thinking about his skinny, big, bewigged one's fantasies, please. On the other hand, the atmosphere at the end is steamy and oppressive. The champion at 50.000001%. So Nikki's just nudging that one by. And Queen Rocks at Queen Rocks Australia, the only blight on the otherwise perfect Sheer Heart Attack album. Dustier than the inside of a used vacuum cleaner bag. I have wondered whether lyrically this is inspired by Peaches, the same person that inspired the lyrics on Brian's Now I'm Here. And I don't know who Peaches is, but...
I don't either. Can't be Peaches Geldof, because wouldn't have been born. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know any of the Peaches people. The only other Peaches I know, Randy, is Peaches by... Who was that? Was that by the Presidents of the United States of America? Was that the band?
Yeah.
Good song,
Peaches.
That.
Yeah.
Millions of peaches. Peaches for me. That one, right? That's the song.
Yeah. Nature's candy in a jar.
Yeah. I almost went into Kermit then. Millions of peaches. Peaches for me.
Peaches come from a can. They were put there by a man.
Andy Hall. See, I got in trouble last week for doing shit accents. So I thought, there, Jim, there's my Kermit voice. You've got to get on board with that one, surely. Andy Hall Radio says, approached as a singular entity, this one is dust. But as we've already covered previously, this is a piece of a larger puzzle, and without it, the puzzle isn't complete. Ain't that a bitch? Hours of your life that you'll never get back because one piece is missing. And yeah, that's very frustrating for all the puzzlers out there. Andrew Holloway says, musically, I like it. Lyrically, I think it highlights Brian's rather idealistic view of women, see White Queen, etc. You can't help feeling he's one of those guys that puts women on a pedestal and then gets very sulky when they don't live up to his impossible expectations. And you know what? That's why he married Anita Dobson, because same haircut. It's like, okay, well, I can get on board with that. It's like looking in a mirror.
David E. Wilson, the guys are right. It's the largely empty, directionless song, and I bloody love it. I didn't appreciate it for years. Not until I was into
GYBE. Oh, man. All right. I'm going to take a run at this. Godzilla. Yomps before Edward. I don't fucking know. It must be a band, but I don't know it. I don't know it, Randy.
Okay.
I'm going to Google it while you're talking.
Okay. And Mogwai and the like. I'm not sure what Mogwai, or if I'm even pronouncing that right, where they'd stretch an idea to create soundscapes and lovely atmospheres, which I think this song does really well. Yeah. I'm not arguing with that. Did you find out what GYBE stands for, Kevin?
Well, it might be Godspeed You! Black Emperor. And I think, Randy, what we should do is we should Google them really quickly here and just play the first song that comes up. Yeah, not for me. I'm gonna dust that one, Randy.
Well, you did give it a fair shake.
I might have to sit and have a listen to a couple of these tracks later, because it's a bit noisy.
And then Lisa Malloy says two words: dirge, dust.
So CD I'm words.
I'm thinking Lisa's not a fan.
Not a fan. It doesn't even want to waste any of her. Fingers typing any life.
No.
Writing anything else about it, so that's fair.
I don't want to waste any fucking pixels on that fucking bullshit song.
Alice's dad, Barry John Williams, says, so she makes me Stormtrooper in stilettos. For a long time, I hated this song, always skipped it. But as I've gotten older, it's grown on me a bit. While calling it a champion still seems wrong, so does dusting it. So I'm going with champion that fell in a pile of dust. 50.01% champion. A pass, but must try harder. Ian Winnick says, She Makes Me has been an integral part of my favorite Queen album from my early teens and refuse to see anything sexual about it. Also, I really love the way it lingers on in the afterglow before Lap of the Gods Revisited arrives with a post-coital cigarette. a champion. And I mean, you know, again, dirty pool if you can start throwing gifts of Marilyn up there, for fuck's sake.
Well, I like how he refuses to see anything sexual about it in the very next sentence. He's talking about having a post-coital cigarette. Very nice, Ian.
He's a good writer, Mr. Winnick.
Kathy Klimek. It's a dusty, dusty skipper to me. And Kyle Anderson says, I will champion this song due to the fact that I can't imagine Sheer Heart Attack without it. And Steve Ursel says, I demand an urgent community-led intervention to help Kevin. Randy is clearly a malign influence with his objective opinions. Cardinal, go fuck yourself. Kev, this is a toxic relationship. Seek help. Good song. It's like a dream. All mood and atmosphere. I love Weird, Brian. Champion. So, and I do believe I responded back with Steve saying, Kev is just seeing the light. He's just seeing it for what it is. And if I could just help one man, just one man at a time, a guy like Kevin, listen, guys, Kev needs lots of guidance. Okay. So don't, you know, don't egg him on like this here. He's in good hands. Anyhow, go on, Kev.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that all that aside, I agree with everything you just said. And you are also still a malign influence. Richard Aaron says, very much a champion and epitomizes the eclectic breadth of the Sheer Heart Attack album. Not sure I liked it instantly, but now I love its eerie tone. As a precursor to Drowse, Brian walked so that Roger could, not so much run exactly, a sound expertly depressed about Sundays. Good point. Similar tone. I think I might have even drawn that parallel myself at some point. But Steve, Queen Rock says, the song makes me feel like I'm wrapped in a cozy blanket. And this is how I imagine the protagonist feels when he's with this woman. It's a beautiful and vulnerable piece of music that is very relatable. I absolutely adore it and will defend it to the moon and back. Champion. It's a long way, the moon. Also made of cheese. It's also made of cheese. Cheese.
Yeah, that's a fair way, Steve. You might want to rethink that. Blagpie says, tough one, this. Always liked it, but listening through Kevin Randy's critical ears, I get their point. I get the sexualized element, but I also think it could have come from Brian being woozy on drugs laid up at the hospital during a fair chunk of 74.
Yeah.
Champ. Just.
Yeah, and we didn't really talk about that.
You're true. We did not talk about that. And what I was just going to say, sorry, is anybody that does seem to be championing it, maybe not everybody, but lots of them are saying it's like 50, you know.
Yeah.
Hardly, you know, percent.
Absolutely.
Keith Austin, firstly, it's off Sheer Heart Attack, so hard to dust. Then there's the intimacy of the song. Gives one all to a belief of love during a sexual experience. It's haunting, clever, and segues beautifully between Leroy and...
Lap of the Gods Revisited.
Shame Fred isn't present. Shame Kevin, Randy are wrong. Love the show. Thanks, Keith. We appreciate... So, I guess what I'm trying to say... Keith, is you're right, but in a more accurate way, you're wrong.
Oh, I knew that was coming. Leslie says, it's just a dust for me. Do I hate it? No. It's just a bit meh. Arnie rocks. I think that's a new commenter, Andy. Arnie here. Welcome, Arnie. One of the rare songs on a 70s Queen album I've always skipped. And left-handed guitar. Can you play left? You can play guitar left-handed, Randy? Thought they had that would be upside down, surely. Says a gorgeous song and the real hidden gem on Sheer Heart Attack. It sounds incredible, and Brian's voice blends so well with the instrumentation. An emotional, unique, and top tier Queen song for me that is full of detail. The dissolve into nightmarish chaos is simply stunning. Yeah, fair enough, man. Fair enough, left-handed Matt.
Old left-handed Matt. Aaron P, 1978 Prime Jive Funster Champion. I think it describes the wonder and confusion of love in a simple and intentional, repetitive way. I also like the ending for being so open and broad, so the listener can draw their own visuals and conclusions on where the relationship goes. Good job, Mr. May. And Aaron Mullen, a bit of a wistful, wanton dreamscape of a song for me. Bri lays himself bare and breathless, but we'll leave it there. Another example of a left-field Queen song, which gives the catalog such variety and vibrancy. I like the double V at the end there, Aaron. And he flip says the champion.
Flip the double Vs.
He's flipping the double Vs, man.
Fair enough. Okay, well, we've just a few left on Twitter here. Nova Jack says, she makes me fall to sleep. Dominic Pierce, I always love this track. Like many of the early songs, it's difficult to hear it in isolation. These albums segue from one song to the next beautifully, and this one sets up the final track on the album, In the Lap of the Gods Revisited, perfectly. Champ. And to finish up, Brian Crozier says, what fresh madness is this? It's fucking champion, you scrotes. Apologize immediately, you fannies. Well, no, since if you're going to use incorrect punctuation there, Brian, you can go fuck yourself.
that's what your problem is with it.
Absolutely.
Not that he's calling us like a couple of scrotes, but that he... brilliant.
Tom Bojay says, Dust, 4 out of 5 times when the song comes on, it's a skipper. And I definitely wouldn't share it with someone who would want to know a hidden gem Queen song. It's almost a wall of sound. Fuck Robin Cable. F-RC. Ah, FRC. We were wondering about that the other day. Fuck Robin Cable. So there we go.
What is that? What, I don't know.
Well, Robin Cable was the producer on I Can Hear Music, the Larry Lurex song. Oh, Robin Cable was the producer on that, who created the very small hedge of sound.
Right. Yeah. Not a wall of sound so much as like a display case of sound.
A divider.
With granny's china in it. Jeremy Walpole. It's on an album I love so much, so I can't stand to dust it, but I wouldn't play it as a standalone track or add to a playlist.
Yeah.
Interesting. And Sean McGinnity. This is one of those where you had to be in the right mood. And if you are, it's a fantastic all day long. But if not, the song just doesn't work. I get a huge Velvet Underground vibe here. It's all about mood, nothing else.
I hate Winnipeg.
Yeah, fair point, Sean.
Do you listen to Velvet Underground? Is that a band that you've ever sort of spent any time with, Randy, or no?
No, I can't say that at all, no.
Yeah, me neither. And I've listened to one of their albums through listening to the fantastic Misty Music podcast, which again, everyone should be fucking listening to if you're not. And I didn't mind it, but it was one of those that I thought, yeah, I've heard that now. I probably won't go back and listen to that again. Didn't hate it, but didn't love it enough to want to go back and spend more time with it. Like most of my girlfriends previously before I got married. Alan Dudney says, it's by no means my favorite track on the album, but I've always liked it. I know I'm supposed to be judging it as an isolated song, but I can't because it's part of such a brilliant album. The songs are all perfectly placed. The sirens wailing and then the breathing before the final breath, then silence, then It's So Easy. It's the next song, obviously. Perfect and the champion. Great show as always. Christ, I could listen to you two talking about the history of bottle tops. Well, there you go. There's another podcast, Randy. Another podcast idea. We can talk about bottle tops. And Al's got our back.
Nice.
He finishes up by saying, which I've just Googled and found out they were invented by William Painter in 1892, surely pissing off Dom Perrier Perignon, who had previously invented the cork stopper in 1670. Fucking Google. Fucking novel. Hey, we just learned about bottle tops and cork stoppers, Alan, so it's all good.
Yeah. That's I didn't think we were going there tonight. But...
I'm glad we did, though. Bruce Seeger says, I've never been so let down by a song title's raised expectations. No hot and spicy stormtrooper stilettos, but a boring and dull snooze fest on slippers. Dust. Oh, and I heard you talking about going over your dad joke quotum. I hope you were joking, because as far as I know, that does and should not exist. I hope. Otherwise, I might get arrested and my kids were actually right. So we'll see when Rude's knocking out the dad jokes left, right, and center. Richard Stott says, Dust, it's just meh. A dirge, worst track and share Heart Attack, and probably the worst of the tracks with May on lead vocals in the whole catalogue. Ooh, now there's a strong claim. My first copy of Share Heart Attack was on cassette, and I used to fast forward through this track. Just boring. So there you go. Now you're into, we have got a skipper there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mark Spang Hansen doesn't make me a boring song going nowhere. Dust. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, Mark. James Lawrence, never been a massive fan, always skipped, definitely not in the top 50%. And you are so right, James. And Michelle Stegman Kurlander, I seldom say anything negative about any Queen track since they all have something to recommend. okay, maybe not a couple of the Rogers tracks where the video has robots. So I simply cannot vote here. The track, the guitar part is boring and repetitive, but I love Brian's lyrics. Simple, but beautiful. Not simplistic, as I can often see with Roger, but simple. There is a difference. So it is yeah, or it is a nay. Can't I just be neutral? I'm torn. Maybe back later. We'll listen again. Well, so yeah, so really, Michelle just really just talked herself in circles, then came right back around again, saying that not sure is, you know, if you need help, Michelle, join the Discord server. There's some good folks on there that'll talk you through it.
Brian Delaney says, I agree with you both. Just for me, the song is just kind of boring and doesn't go anywhere. Not a terrible song, but definitely one of the lesser ones from Brian. Russell Watkins says, it's a champion for me. A great contrast with the more aggressive tracks on the album. Brian sounds super vulnerable. Some of the vocal harmonies are reminiscent of Simon and Garfunkel here. For me, it's very much an integral part of the Running Order on Sheer Heart Attack. And you'll get no argument from me there, Russell. As I've said, Nick Croft's probably the weakest track on the album. I don't hate it, but it's no champion. So again, don't dislike the song, people. Don't come at me.
Alexander Rye, just can't. This one is always a skipper for me when playing the brilliant Sheer Heart Attack. I have tried several times to join the hype for this very deep cut, and each time I arrive at the same conclusion. I feel as though I am suffocating. I dislike the plodding tempo, and there is too little melodic content for me. The lyrics and vocal, sorry, Bri, are meh. It is at the very bottom of the dust pile for me. Oh, Alexandra does not fucking dig it. Charmaine Polly, it gives me such an Velvet Underground vibes. I absolutely love this track. One of my faves by Brian, for sure.
Yeah, and that's where, because I was saying Joan Baez, right? And that when you said, no, it's not like Joan Baez, but I was thinking of that era, and it was definitely Velvet Underground I was thinking of rather than Joan. So that's where that confusion started and ended.
Right, I think... Did I not say then? I didn't know where to get the Joan Baez.
You pulled me up on that, yeah, immediately. Oh, okay. I mean, immediately. Sorry. As I said it, yeah.
Okay.
Sarah Chapman says, it's a champion for me. A brilliant track on a fantastic album. I love that little trio of Misfire, Leroy Brown, and She Makes Me. I've only listened to 38 minutes of the pod so far, so I'm unsure which way your votes are going. Thank you for the group shout out. That's the Queen Pod fans group on Facebook. And yes, I'm only back on Twitter for Seaside Pod and Recovering Queen. Keep up the great work. Likewise, Sarah, keep up the fantastic work curating the community that you created over with the Queen Pods group.
Patrick McCarthy, She Makes Me is bloody gorgeous. It's some vital breathing space after a frenetic, clever cloggery of Leroy Brown. Simplistic and slow on purpose, rich and atmospheric, and the weak, thin vocal serves the vibe. I consider it Shoegaze Queen, definitely in the top 50% of this madcap band's spotty oeuvre. And Michael J. Smith, it's just too boring and doesn't do anything for me emotionally or melodically. It hurts to dust anything off Sheer Heart Attack, but here it goes. Oh, dust.
It's pretty even, headache. It really is a pretty even split, though. You know, even though it has come out on top, but it's not a strong champion for anyone, including Brian Graham, who says, generally like the song as something different, but you guys swung it for me. Definitely at the lower end of the Queen spectrum. Wouldn't skip it, though. That bites the dust. Yeah. Mary Cam says, champion, love it so much. And Serena Shimeka says, it's okay. I've championed it because it's on one of my favorite albums. It's a bit weak, but not a skipper. And Suzanne Morris says, sounds fine on the album, never a skipper, and fills the space well. A dust job for me, but only just below the champion line.
Yeah, there you go. Richard Osteveen, doesn't bring me any joy, so it bites the dust for me. Not Queen worthy. PJ Davies, it's one of those songs I think I should like. I try to go back with it with fresh ears every now and then, but I'm afraid I find it a slog to listen to. It makes me want to fall asleep. And PJ is not the first one to say that. Matt Williams, champion for me. Love this ethereal track. It drips with a kind of late night, early 70s city atmosphere. Thanks, Matt.
So I think, you know, that's our social media there. And the vote came back on Facebook as 17-16 champion. So that was quite a bit closer. Right? We just thought just over 50% there on Facebook. But it's funny that I think the votes for that song almost sort of tend to, you can read them as like, if you're into the vibe, then it's a great song. And sometimes it's one of those songs that if you catch it in the right mood, it's like, oh, yeah, this is great. It's exactly what you need, but you've kind of got to be in that mood for it, I think, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure mood I'd have to be in to dig that song, but that's just me.
All right. Well, should we do some manifesting, Randy? Should I ask you what song you want us to do this week?
Sure. I just can't imagine we would do anything else right now.
All right. So what do you want to listen to then? What are you thinking?
Ogre Battle.
Ooh, we also go back to Queen too. Excellent.
Come on.
All right.
What about you? What do you about you, Dr. Brown?
Well, I think statistically we're probably just about due something from Flash. So I'm gonna go with The Hero. Okay. It won't make as much sense if you're not listening to it after Flash, but you know the song Flash well enough, so I think you'd be okay with it. Over in our Discord community, we've got some manifestations from our wonderful Discordants. Barry John Williams says, "You Don't Fool Me." Chrissy, White Queen as it began. Paul Bradbury, Cool Cat. Ian Winnick, Lily of the Valley. Paz, we've got another manifestation here from Mustafa. We usually get that at least once a week from people. Someone else, Aaron Mullins says, "The Hero." So that's two of us. Chappers wants Rocket, Prime Jive. Mark Spanghansen and Michael J. Smith, You and I. Nikki, Seven Seas of Rye. Black Pie and Steve, Let Me Entertain You. Ruddy wants Liar. So this is an oft-manifested song. Alan Dudney, Dear Friends. Matt Greenham, Dreamer's Ball. And Steve Ursel, Need Your Loving Tonight. So we've got quite a few manifestations here. Different eras. Not much 80s kicking around in this one. Just a couple of, couple tracks here and there. But mainly 70s. So that means we're almost certainly getting something from Made in Heaven. And we'll see what the wheel gives us.
Probably.
Oh, we just went past Ogre Battle. We are... Well, there we go. Well, we didn't have very many from this album, and we've had two in fairly close succession now here. What are we listening to, Randy?
We're listening to Hammer to Fall from The Works.
Yeah, it's a single. It's a big song. It's a song that I know that you know. I don't even have to ask you this, Dan. Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see how we want to predict this, what our users have come back and say about this song. I don't know which way it's going. It'll be a champion, I think, but I don't think it'll be a strong one. So we'll see. But we're not there yet. Before we get to that stage of proceedings, and I'm cutting to the chase here, what are we going to do first, Randy?
We need to do our fucking research, buddy. We got to just fucking just get on the Googler and Google ourselves away to fucking Research City.
Oh, you're a very silly boy.
So, Kev, yeah, we have Hammer to Fall, written by Mr. May at 4 minutes, 25 seconds. We got all our favorite people doing all our favorite things with our man from Estevan, Fred Mandel, on the synthesizer. I just love that the guy's from Estevan. What he'd had to have rise to leave that town. Anyhow, recorded at Musicland Studios in Munich, January 1984. And I definitely know the song well, but I got to be honest with you, I never really listened to the lyrics too much. Mm. And I'm just finding out now it's basically written about Brian's fear of nuclear war, which was a real threat for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, the lyrics are overtly sort of, you're going to read that into it. I mean, Hammer to Fall and Mushroom Cloud and all that kind of stuff. But Brian, in an interview, I think he wrote on his website here, I'm reading that what he said was Hammer to Fall is really about life and death and being aware of death as being part of life, and that the hammer coming down is only a symbol of the Grim Reaper doing his job. But again, he's sort of using the language and iconography of the Cold War for sure, right? In the title and some of the lines. So
Yeah,
so I mean, it charted 13 on the UK chart. Didn't chart here in Canada. Didn't chart on the Billboard Hot 100, but it did hit 35 in the US mainstream rock chart. So it was, I would say, I mean, we could probably say this is a minor hit. But it was also played at Live Aid, so I think it got a lot more exposure there. And then it was, I think you'd found out that it was included basically every single set list between 84 and 86, right? So they played, after right, release, yeah. It was played every time they played live up to that and until they finished, so.
Yeah.
All right, well, should we listen to a bit of Hammer to Fall, Randy? What do you say?
I think that would be a good thing to do right about now, Kevin.
What do you think of Roger's snare sound? We talked about snare sounds last week on She Makes Me, and you definitely weren't a fan there. What do you think of this one?
I'm just only 15 seconds into it, so I have not formed an opinion yet.
Well, you know, just have one ear on it. Just, you know, because it's a thing that... Yeah, this is the comment that I'm going to end up making on the snare, I think, on this, but we'll get to that.
I will listen very, very closely to that snare because I like listening to snare drums. No, I'm not even joking, because when you're recording an album and it's the snares, it's a huge, huge part of it and how you're going to make it sound. And
yeah.
So I was joking and serious all at the same time. What do you call that? What is that? Jirious.
Oh, really? You just made up a word. You can make it just fucking,
just like what? Nothing for me.
I was like, like, was this sure as cold shit and a dead dog or something you came out with earlier?
Yeah, you like that one?
Hit me with new zingers all the time, man.
I had an old farmer tell me that one. I laughed like hell the first time I heard it.
It's pretty good. Here we stand, and here we fall. Great vocal. Really, yeah. I love Freddie's vocal on this, and I really like the harmonies on it. So you get those big full Queen harmonies, right?
Well, it's a super great chorus.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Snare sound, you're asking. Yeah. Mm. Okay, well, so far, I actually don't really super duper love the mix. The bass is very, yeah, very quiet. And I find the drums, I find they all sound like they're in a bigger room than they need to. But this was recorded in, what did I say, 84?
84, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would probably have to blame the era.
Yeah.
So I'm not, don't super love the drum sound. I'll say Brian's guitar sounds fucking great.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And I have so far not yet heard My Man from Estevan, so I'm keeping a keen ear out for that.
Yeah, it's just, I think this album, for some people, the production is a bit uneven, and I think I would never have heard that back when I was a kid, right? Because I was 11 when this came out, and I just like rocking out Hammer to Fall. But when I listen to it now, there's just something about that snare sound that I don't love, you know. And it doesn't fucking spoil the song for me when we get to the album, and it's not going to sway me, but it's definitely something that I think, yeah, it could be better.
Yeah, obviously a stylistic choice.
Mm-hmm.
They could have made those drums sound like they're in a smaller room. They could have changed the snare out. I mean, you know, very often, even in small time little studios like that I run, you'll try a few snares out. You'll try a couple. It's like, oh, that one's too big and boxy, or that's, so, you know, they obviously did that with this, and this is the one they wanted.
Of you is falling away. So unbeknownst to our listeners, my my pal the Cardinal there has his acoustic guitar that he's playing to see what key we're in.
I was, you know what, I got to be honest with you. I was really quite certain it was an A.
Yeah.
And I was right. And and I did. I heard our man from Estevan creeping in there, hey?
He was in there, yeah, with his little synth.
That's good. It's good. We got to represent.
When it gives it a nice texture, it takes the song someplace else. Because, I mean, I like the jaggedness of this song, the angular sort of nature of it, because there's big stops, right? So there's no, after that, ding, ding, there's no bass note coming. Oh, I can hear a little bit of guitar there.
I think oh, did you really?
A little bit. I can play a little bit of guitar there.
I didn't think you could hear it usually, right?
Not usually. Nah, it's cutting. I'm getting like the a little bit of the first note and then back off.
Damn Zoom.
Damn fucking Zoom. Yeah, it's cool. Like I said, I like that. I like that synth coming in there because it just moves the song along, which is the songs should move along. Shouldn't do the same thing over and over and over again, which was my criticisms of She Makes Me. So. So before we get into the bridge there, I love that lead into the bridge because he's playing those little chugs on that rhythm guitar, but then he lets them ring a little bit more. You know, so he's really kind of palm muting them to start in the first couple passes, and then he just kind of eases off that so you can hear the notes a little bit more. And again, just that progression, just to do something different to lead into this next section, I think is, I always like that, but I don't know. And I noticed it when I was a kid, I didn't really know, well, he's palm muting and then he's letting you, but I just thought, oh, that sounds fucking cool. So,
yeah. Yeah, he's building it, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. And we're at 1:30 of a 4-minute 25 song, so let's rip through a bit more of it.
Yes, please.
Yeah, good. Ooh, build.
Did you hear Freddie was stretching?
Oh, yeah.
He was definitely at the very top of his range with window pane.
Yeah.
Any higher, he's going to have to go into his falsetto.
Yeah, and doesn't do that. He never did. He never hit that note live. He would always kind of drop it down, you know. And this song, Freddie always did that. He would change the way he sang things, and Roger would take that high note, right? And they just like, so you always get this, the full palette of those tones, but it's just Roger will step in when he needs to because Roger can do that stuff effortlessly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he is, you know, a eunuch, one would assume, with that kind of range.
That's what I've always assumed, and maybe we can start a rumor now that we can get around going around the Queen community. Roger Taylor is ballless. That's what you're saying, Kev.
I'm saying that he's without balls, yes. Although we know that's not true, because he's sired about, what, 58 kids did we say he's got or something? Think of that solo, Randy.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I think the first whatever, I was gonna say half, but I think it's more like a quarter of it was designed just for dogs to hear. Just right.
Yeah.
So he's using all those pinch harmonics way, yep. way, way, way up top. And it's really quite squealy. Yeah. Not my favorite part, but all the rest of it I really liked. He has got some real nice, you know, some real nice hoodla hoodlas coming off the back of his dog whistle part.
It's great, that upward progression here, where it just keeps stepping up, 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 and you think, and then it breaks down into that big major key, and it works out. It's straight pentatonic, super, super, super cool. I've always liked this solo.
It's cool.
I'm trying to remember. I think that's the thing. I think they chopped a bit of this out in the single edits. I think it just goes straight to that bit, if I remember rightly. I'm not too many people to correct me on that, but there's definitely a section of this that's just cut out. So,
right. Just, yeah, keep it under 3 minutes or whatever, probably.
Yeah, I mean, because it's a pretty fucking long solo. Mm-hmm. You know, we're getting 45-ish seconds, something like that, of this solo, which I don't mind. You know, I like listening to Brian May plays guitar. I'm a Queen fan, for fuck's sake.
Exactly.
So like coming into this section now, they're leaving that note on the end, right? So ding, ding. So instead of doing that big stop, now he's doing the sustain on the note to again just sort of, you know, move the song along. And now it's one of those things that sometimes like, oh yeah, we're in the outro now. But sometimes a song, you just know when you've hit the outro, you think, yeah, this isn't going anywhere else now. This is where we are now.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. It's got outro written all over it.
So I'm just going to stop it there for a quick, you know, just so we don't get too much of the song in the episode, just because, you know, we're trying to be marginally respectful of Queen's intellectual property, trying not to get copyright strikes. But I like, again, where you get those big sustains at the end of each phrase and then it pulls it back off again to give that punch, and Fred putting in the vocal in between really sort of punches home that hammer to fall idea. Like it's just, it sounds like hammer, right? I mean, it's doing it deliberately and it's got that hammer to fall, that big hit. I just love those. Hey, I love all those things that Fred does here.
Yeah, I was thinking as he was doing that, how come, what kind of restraint Brian was showing to not wail on his Red Special over top of all that.
Definitely,
but he didn't. You know, he's a man of restraint. You know, I don't know why you're so hard on him all the time, Kev.
It's a man of restraint. Other than at the end of that bloody song last week, when he was definitely. If he hasn't arrived, he's got all sorts of restraint.
He should have been restrained.
It's a good piece of arranging, right? We talk about it lots, that Brian May, as much as he can hoodle up with the best of them, he's also very, very good, very good at playing for the song.
Yeah, for sure.
There you go. The hammer has fallen.
The hammer has in fact fallen.
Okay, for those of you who are new to the podcast, which is probably no one, I think we've topped out here, Randy. Actually, no, we are getting new listeners now and again, Randy. So I will tell people that what we do now is, and we started out doing this originally because if it's a song that Randy doesn't know, then someone pointed out that it's really difficult to get a good sense of the song and judge it based on the 15 seconds, 20 seconds with my incessant fucking interrupting and talking. So I had to get a good sense of it. So we started listening to the whole song again afterwards. But I've actually found that going back and listening to the whole thing through allows me time to make some notes and just have a more of a general listen to. And you do pick up stuff after the second pass through. So we're going to listen to this again. That won't be in the episode, obviously. There'll be a little fade in, fade out. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about this song.
Brett asks for it one more time and he doesn't get it.
Hey, if Freddie Mercury says you give it to me one more time, you fucking give it to him one more time.
But he didn't. He didn't. Brian said, fuck you. This is my song.
It's a rope-a-dope, Randy. It's a rope-a-dope in us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there we go. We'll listen to it once. We'll listen to it twice. So now we've got to vote on this thing. So we do have a binary system here for deciding on these songs. There's no third option. There's no middle ground. We have to put our thumb up or our thumb down. So, Randy, Hammer to Fall. Song you know well. Big sort of, I would say, a minor hit. Big live staple from 84 to 86. Is this one of the champions? Or will it bite the dust?
Yeah. I'm not going to surprise you with this, I don't think.
We are the champions, my friends.
Well, Kev, I got to do the old reversa flippy flippy. So what do you think? Is this a champion or is this one bite the motherfucking dust?
Well, you know, last week, Randy, I did say that I did dust a song that I like. I did say that I like the song and I still dusted it. So I've got form on this. So it may surprise you to find that I am going to vote this way.
We are the champions, my friends.
I'm stunned.
You're stunned. Stunned and amazed.
Stunned and shocked that you would do something so radical.
Yeah. I love The Works. There's something special to me about The Works. I think it's one of the first albums I really remember coming out. You know what I mean? Like as a Queen fan, it's one of the first albums, because Hot Space, I sort of remember, but the album was just too weird and too different for me. But The Works was sort of returned to form. It's like, this is Queen rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
And I listened to this album lots as a kid. And so I'm really, really familiar with the song. And definitely there was that, you know, the Mushroom Cloud was, I grew up as you did in an era where we were really worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. We were always constantly threatened. Those fucking stupid movie When the Wind Blows and all that stuff were terrifying young kids about these bloody nuclear wars and things. This song hit that part of the zeitgeist really, really well. I think, you know, the mix, like you said, it's definitely not great, because when you listen to what John's actually playing, when you can hear it, John's tearing the fuck out of this song. It's brilliant bass part, and I'll try and find an isolated track maybe once we can have a quick listen to maybe at the end, or we'll even just listen to it live, because live, this song cooks way, way harder. And I think it's even, yeah. I think they do it a little bit faster too. Great drum track. I just don't love that. I don't love the tone of the drums and the snare especially. It's just got a weird, there's a weird snap to it that I just don't, it doesn't sound real. I know it is, but it's, you know what I mean? It's got like that really sort of over-processed sound that I don't love. What I do love is that bridge into the solo though. You know, the big, so the changing key, and it goes into rich or poor or famous, for your truth, it's all the same. Lock your door, but rain is pouring through your window pane. And then they get into Brian's solo. Now, the solo, you sort of commented on that squealy section. And what in Brian's defense, as if he needs my defense, I think that that discordant sort of tone and all those pinched harmonics and squeals are deliberate to sort of match the tone of the song. There's a darkness to the song, and it's about this sort of death and decay and everything. So I think doing that, you know, for me, it fits. But as you said, the chorus in this song is what it's all about, right? You just really want to get to the chorus because it's big and glorious, got great harmonies in it. And I'll tell you, Andy, I can just about sing most of this one. Me and my family used to play a lot of the video game Rock Band. And this is after quite a few beers, Dad would be asked to sing Hammer to Fall, and I can get through most of it until Fred gets right up into that top end of the end and just fuck that. I was going to ask you too about them, but I'll get your comments here, but the ending is long. You know, the ending is a good minute, but I don't think it drags for me for an album track, because obviously the single version is cut down. For an album track, I don't think it drags too badly though, because they do add and subtract from it. You know, Brian's sustaining the end of that phrase, then they drop it back out, and you've got the big drum crack and Freddie filling in, that kind of stuff. So I think it's at least they're doing something with it at the end. It's not just the same thing out to fade. So I don't mind the length of it. So I think that the ending's okay for me. How about you?
Yeah, I think they could have shaved a few seconds off that outro, if I'm being totally honest with you. The whole Freddie saying, you know, hit me one more time and all that. I mean, it's, you know, I guess it's kind of cool to hear him say all that stuff, but it's pretty unnecessary really at the end of the day. The mix is not great. It really isn't, which is so odd, a band at this level and having that as their mix. But I guess as we stated, that's the decision that they made. And I very much do like the bridges you're saying. Brian's playing a really cool little arpeggiated part. Like,
yeah.
A clean guitar with sounds like maybe a chorus or something like that on it. It's really quite nice. And I do like the guitar solo. Like I said, maybe Brian had like a dog at home that was hard of hearing, and he really wanted that dog to experience the song too. So he wanted to get it right up in the stratosphere, where it's just really, really, you know. And maybe his dog would start howling or something. I don't know, but either way, it's a very cool solo. I'm just being a fucking idiot. It's cool solo, and I said it, you said it, but yeah, it's the chorus that it brings you back, right?
Yeah.
Blues Traveler said the hook brings you back, and that's what's happening. We all just want to hear Freddie sing Hammer to Fall, right? Because it makes you feel good.
I ain't telling you no lie. The hook brings you back. All that you can rely.
Yeah. I don't know what else there is to say about it. Yeah, you're right. The drums do kind of sound like shit, which like is obviously that's what they were going for. And I don't know why they did it. Why they couldn't have just bumped that bass up a few dB. Even that would have solved a lot of problems. Get rid of a bunch of the verb on. It just almost as though it really kind of feels like Freddie's vocal and the drums are, you know. You would like it to sound, even in a studio track, you would like it to sound like, you know, they just went in the studio and just ripped it off.
Yeah.
All of them together in the same room. And that's just the way Queen sound. That's what you would like any recording to sound when you go in there. But what happens to me is I find those drums kind of make you feel like they're removed from the rest of the track, especially in relations to Freddie's vocal.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. But I don't know. Maybe I think I've probably talked lots and really maybe not even said too much. So
no, I think you just said something though there that's really twigged something for me that I hadn't thought about it in that specific way before. About that's exactly what the drums sound. They sound very much like they've been done at a way later date because everything else does sound a bit more organic.
Yeah,
but the drums sound so different and so separate. I like that idea that, you know, putting it that way, that it's sort of. They're over there and everything else is over here, and it shouldn't be. They should all be together.
Yeah. Should be cohesive, and that and the drums the way they are doesn't leave it sounding that way.
Totally agree. Well, I want to play you a little bit of the live version here, from Wembley. Not the Live Aid version, because that was sort of a bit abbreviated. We'll just play a bit of it here and we'll maybe listen to some of this, and I'll probably edit this down, but we're just gonna sit and listen to a bit of this because I think, like I said, there's more beef when they play it live, and it just sounds fucking better.
Yeah, cool.
And you get a bit of rhythm guitar from Spike Edney. So there you go, man. I mean, that's like I said, we were talking a little bit there as we were listening to it. Roger's drums sound fucking fantastic in this. You know?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how much, but they got to be playing at least 10 beats a minute faster I do believe I've said this before too. I wonder if, you know, after listening back to this, you know, if they thought, shit, you know, how come we didn't record that faster in the studio when we had the chance?
Yeah.
But, you know, hindsight, 2020, all that bullshit.
A couple of great secret weapons too, right? I mean, you got Rog, you've got this guy, like we've talked about lots, like who can sing these harmonies, and he just does it without even blinking while he's playing in front of, you know, however many 90,000 people. And like, what a pleasure to have a song like this in your set that you can bring in sort of, you know, because it's getting dark, as you can see on the video here. And it's that sort of back end of your set. You can still rip people's face up with this. And then also John motherfucking Deacon, who is, you know, as cool as Freddie Mercury is, as cool as Roger Taylor is, in this video, I'm just like, you got to be cool to be able to wear yellow short shorts and a Hilda Ogden t-shirt and still look badass.
It's like he's off to a fucking track meet as soon as he's done the gig, hey? Now, I'm not going to have time to change, guys, so I'm just going to wear this on stage.
The three-legged cool, race, right? Oh, man, I love Deaky. Yeah, so, yeah, Hammer to Fall. I mean, like I said, it's a good song all round. You know, we sometimes say, I just don't like this song. Well, I just fucking like this song. I kind of suspect that we're going to be with the majority of Queen fans who also like this song. But as you had to tell me what you thought first, you've also got to guess first on the Twitter poll and how you think the Twitter poll is going to come back.
Well, yeah, okay, I can do that. That's easy. Easy peasy. Mm. Lemon squeezy. I'm going to say that the Queen fandom at large are going to like this at a rate of 80%. And 20% are going to say, fuck you.
You know, hear something? See, I'm not typing that into my notes because I'd already done it. That was my guess about what you were going to guess.
Wow.
So that was pretty good.
Wow, very good. Yeah. What about you, Kev? What do you think?
I think you're pretty fucking close again, you dirty dog. So I've really just got to go a couple percent over or under, right?
Yeah, yeah. And if I were you, I'd probably go higher.
I think 85-15 is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I almost went with that.
I think we might split the difference on this one. You know, it wouldn't, honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if you were closer on this one, because there'll be some people who just, you'll say, like, the criticism I could see leveled against this is it's a generic stadium rock song, which, if you want to be a dick about it, sure, okay. But Queen wrote loads of stadium rock songs, you know, so I don't know whether that is a valid objection to it. It just, and again, man, live, it fucking cooks. And I know that we haven't been talking about live stuff on this podcast because we are looking at the studio recordings, but I think in the studio recordings, it's still good, even though I've got some issues with the production. So yeah, I'm 85-15 and 80-20. I think we'll be close, man. I think we'll be close on this one. I'm more confident on this one.
Yeah. Is this the works, is it loved like Sheer Heart Attack, you know, amongst the Queen fandom?
No, definitely not.
I don't think it is. Yeah, as far as I could tell, it wasn't. But
yeah, I mean, it's still, I think it's, I would say out of all the 80s albums, aside from The Game, which I always kind of think of The Game as the capstone to the 70s rather than the start of the 80s. For some reason in my head, it's always that way because it fits better with the old stuff. But Hot Space, The Works, Kind of Magic, The Miracle, Innuendo. You know, none of those are universally lauded within the community, with the Queen fandom, definitely not. But I think The Works is probably my favorite out of those, I would say, more or less.
Well, I'm just looking at the track listing, and of course, I am the non-serious Queen fan, but I know a few off of this album, and I like them.
Mm-hmm. It's a good album, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's tight, like it's got a focus on, there's still, I mean, it's still rock and roll, but it's a focus on good, like, poppy melodies, that kind of stuff, and writing for the times, I guess, and producing for the times, but it's pretty fucking good album, and this is one of the stronger songs on it.
Agreed.
Agreed. I've got to find a clip for that. I keep meaning to find the clip for that, but I haven't yet, so. But it just makes me laugh every time you do it, so.
Great, I like it.
Great record.
Excellent album. We learned a lot from
great
it.
Record.
Oh, good lord. All right. Well, there you go. Hammer to Fall. The hammer's fallen. We have avoided us, thankfully, so we're unscathed. Mm-hmm. Probably not far off done. I think we've podded. We came, we saw, we podded, as Julius Caesar once famously said.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what he said. I think it's the quote, isn't it?
I still think that's what it was.
Veni, vidi, vici. Veni, vici must mean we potted, I think, right? Or I potted, I suppose.
Look, I'm just trying to pod over here, all right? Get the hell.
Oh, how much you laughed when I said that.
Oh, it's fucking ridiculous. That's why
it's
I love it.
It's absolutely stupid. I'm trying to think, you know, if Julius Caesar were around today, I wonder what he would pod about. What would he pod about?
I don't know, staying away from, I don't know,
Brutus.
Yeah. Yeah, probably you. Probably Brutus. Yeah.
So I'm gonna do a shitty accent again here, just for Jim. Hey, yeah. Brutus, I want to start the podcast. I'm gonna call the fuck are you, Brutus.
Is he also gonna make a pepperoni pizza? Or
hey, a pasta the pepperoni? Yeah. What's the matter for you?
Oh.
Gypsy hates them, so I'm going to keep them coming.
There you go.
Because I'm going to stay away from Pakistani and Nigerian, but anything else is fair game.
Which one did he hate the most? Let's give him a little shot of that.
Oh, I'd imagine Irish. Okay, because he's got no sense of humor. I don't know what that was. That was bad even for me.
Are you trying to say that they're always after your lucky charms, Kev?
They're always after me lucky charms.
Jesus Christ.
That's me, but that's not me doing an Irish accent. That's me doing the Austin Powers accent, which is definitely right. Not Irish either, right?
I think.
Why are you not getting out? I'm getting on. So why you've got to start ripping out some accents here? It's your turn.
Fucking way. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing
you're
that.
You're part French. You can give me a little bit of the Parisian tongue, huh? No?
I can do a few, but I'm not doing them here in this public forum.
Howard.
Well, episode 74. You don't waste no time at all. Don't hear the bell, but you answer the call. It comes to you as to us all. We're just waiting for the hammer to fall. Waiting, indeed, and still waiting, and thank goodness for that. If I were to title this episode, I'd call it, "Hey, that cloud looks like a mushroom," or possibly, "No nukes in my neighborhood." We genuinely appreciate your support and engagement, so you can find us on Facebook in Blue Sky at Seaside Pod Review, and on Twitter at Queen Seaside. Also, check out Discord. We've got some extra stuff on there. We will be back with you next week to chat about Queen.
Brand new angle, highly commendable. Seaside Pod Review. Woo-hoo. Seaside Pod Review.
Give us a kiss, Kevy.
Seaside Pod Review.
What's the matter to you? Hey, got no respect. What do you think you do? Why you look so sad? It's not so bad. It's a nicer place. Ah, shut up your face.
That's my mom, I can remember. Big accordion.